All right, so we are here with Ricky Blair, who was president of AMATIC from November 2007 through December 2009. Hello.
Hello, Russ.
We'll start off with your professional background. Where did you go to college, and what did you major in?
I went to got my bachelor's degree from Cleveland State University in Cleveland, Ohio, in mathematics. I then received a master's in education in community college teaching from Cleveland State in 1971. Oh, I shouldn't tell you the dates, right? And then my PhD from Kent State University in curriculum instruction in mathematics from Kent State University.
And you had a dissertation on the history of AMATIC, right?
Yes. I was so interested in not doing something that was really math problems, but rather math related, that I interviewed all the first presidents and even the people that were involved in creating the organization back in the late 60s and early 70s. So it was very interesting. And also did a national survey of members to see what their interests were at that time. But this is now, that was in the late 80s.
How long did you teach in a community college or a two-year college, and which one did you teach at?
I taught at Lakeland Community College in Kirtland, Ohio, outside of Cleveland. I taught full-time from 1981 to 2001. And prior to that, I was a part-timer from 1975 up to 1981 when I was hired full-time. And during my time there, I was chair of the department. I had a stint at the Ohio Board of Regents. I was chair of the curriculum committee of the college, and very active all around, not only in the college, but in AMATIC as well.
During that time in the classroom, how did the teaching of mathematics change?
During my career?
Yeah.
Well, during my career was the development and the beginning of the use of graphing calculators. So there was a lot of change, a lot of discussion, a lot of positives and negatives in terms of the use of technology during that time. Near the end of my career, of course, the computer algebra systems now that are on the computer and on the handheld devices, and of course distance learning.
Right.
So I would say that in terms of the changes during my career, I would say they were technology based, as well as perhaps, and this was what I was particularly interested in, really infusing our classrooms with collaborative learning and active student learning, instead of the sage on the stage lecturer, rather the facilitator of learning and getting students to get their hands onto the problems and talk to each other and share and discuss. So,
well, and the technology could have been very useful for that then, for that change in focus.
Yes, yes. But it changes your teaching practice when you start to work in that way. I mean, it's easy to stand up there and say all the things that you know by heart, and you can lecture and then, you know, do other problems in your head while you're lecturing one thing. So it's a very different teaching practice, but I happen to really like it, and I did write a couple textbooks with that kind of pedagogy.
Oh, really? What were the names of the textbooks?
Algebra, well, introductory and intermediate algebra.
Okay, all right, very good. Okay. Are they still in publication? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
What year did you join AMATIC?
I went to AMATIC for the first time in 1984 in New York. So it was actually the 10th anniversary. And at that time, they handed out the first AMATIC history, And of course that, well, this was, what I say, 84, so before I even started my doctoral program. So I thought that was fascinating. And that's kind of what got me going on my dissertation, is that I was fascinated with all of that history and what had happened. So I went in 1984, and I attended the first AMATIC Summer Institute, which was in Idaho, and met a lot of folks there, including Karen Sharp, who was eventually another president, and just got active in AMATIC from then on.
Well, and interestingly,
almost 30 years now.
Interestingly enough, it was your history that got me interested, because you compiled the, I guess that was the 25th anniversary, wasn't it? So, mm-hmm. Sort of a chain of events there.
Yeah.
How did you first learn about AMATIC? Do you remember?
I do. Soon after I was hired in Ohio, I came out down and taught in Florida for 1 year. And while I was in Florida, the faculty there were very active in the Florida group, and AMATIC had just been in Florida, so they were all enthused about it, and they said, oh, you got to go to AMATIC. So when I went back home to Ohio then, that next year, I went to my first AMATIC, and then I've been to every one since, except for one when I was not able because of my back.
Are you a member of any other professional organizations other than AMATIC?
I'm regularly a member of MAA and NCTM.
Mm-hmm.
I have been a member of AMTE, but that's not a regular membership, but regularly MAA and NCTM.
I have sort of a reference to this already. You were a historian of AMATIC for mm-hmm. a time. What years were you historian? Do you remember offhand?
Somewhere around
99, somewhere in there, right?
No, it was earlier. It was actually during Karen Sharp's presidency, because
okay.
she did it, but I can't remember. Around 94 to 99,
okay.
something like that. I think
well,
that's it.
What other roles have you played in AMATIC?
I was the first chair of the Placement and Assessment Committee. Then I was Midwest Vice President.
Can you talk about that a little bit, that you were the first chair of that committee? So was that a time when we were getting interested in proper placement of students into the correct class? Is that what we were talking about, that committee?
Yes. And at that time, I'm sorry, it was during Carl Smith's term, whatever
okay.
dates those are, which I'd have to look up. Colleges were beginning to use placement tests more, mm-hmm. But everybody was using all kinds of different tests
yeah.
and vendors and so forth. And so I did a national survey and presented the data in a journal article for what people were doing. It was really the first time that we became interested or concerned or wanted to know what we could do better as an organization to help our members in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so we haven't really done as much as maybe we could do in that area, but we do provide a forum now because that committee is a standing committee.
Wow, that was a very important start then, because that's a huge issue that all colleges face at the moment, colleges and universities, I think.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So I interrupted you, but I thought that was quite interesting. So what other roles have you played?
I was Midwest Vice President. I'm sorry, I should have prepared better. somewhere between 93 to 97.
All right.
And then I was historian, that overlapped uh-huh. with that, and then president-elect, president, and past president, which was basically from 2005 through 11.
Okay. During your presidency, what issues, what were the key issues that AMATIC faced?
Are you skipping questions? That's okay.
No, I don't think
maybe
I did.
Maybe have them out of order.
Six.
Okay, good, good, good. I just wrote them in different time. What's 10?
Well, we're talking about future issues in 10, and we can tie those two things together if you want.
No. I just had an old version of these, so that's okay.
Oh.
Well, of late, the issues during my presidency were things like how to provide more professional development for our members.
Mm-hmm.
While social media had been in existence for a little while, AMATIC had not embraced any social media techniques or platforms. And so we began talking about them in earnest.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it wasn't until Rob's term as presidency that we finally did create a social networking coordinator for AMATIC. But mm-hmm. when an issue comes to AMATIC, it takes a while before any real resolution or solution to the issue. You know, we are a small organization without an executive director, with a great staff who work like crazy to keep things running, but it takes a while to get things organized and get consensus and to figure out how to address a need.
Mm-hmm.
So that happened with the social media stuff that we started talking about it during my term, and then we had a coordinator in Rob's term.
You know, things move slowly in education in general, though.
Well, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. It just seems like it was, forever. But also along those lines, to answer your question, related to that is also distance learning. The whole distance learning thing has just mushroomed, you know, escalated exponentially in the last, 5 years or so.
Right.
So,
and we've been putting out positions on that recently, too.
Well, again, takes a while,
you know,
for that to happen. So was a distance learning committee and became the Innovative Teaching and Learning Committee, you know, that's gone through sort of a transitional period, too. So the other issues during my presidency, personally, I have always felt very strongly about the need for a national presence for AMATIC, because it's not that they meaning other organizations as well as government agencies like National Science Foundation or the U.S. Department of Education, it's not that they don't respect or care about community colleges, which was the case 20 years ago. They do care about them a lot. However, they sort of forget about us. And they'll initiate a project or some kind of initiative for elementary and K-12, and then forget that we attached to K-12. And the same thing for the four-year colleges. They're in their own little group, and they forget that we attach to them. So when I say national presence, it's about continuing to build those bridges, not only within the two-year college community, but also across K-20.
Right.
We're kind of stuck in the middle, trying to meet the needs of everybody, including
right.
our own students who have their own particular unique needs.
Mm-hmm.
In many, many ways, as you know only
yes.
too well. But what you need to, what our leadership of AMATIC needs to constantly do is be in the same room with all these other people at key events, forums, and so forth, and speak up and say, hey, you know, we're doing some good work in the community college as well. An example would be in teacher prep. For many years, nobody thought that the community colleges should or were involved in teacher prep. But of course, we were teaching math for elementary school teachers, the actual mathematics course, and some colleges were teaching some methods courses. But nobody thought of us in the continuum of teacher training. So that actually changed around Sadie's term of office, where there was some national initiatives to, and now we have many, many community colleges who are very active in teacher training and have early classroom experiences in teaching mathematics while the students are at the community college. So that's another example. But that has been underway now for a while. But again, this national presence is not, you know, just sort of being there, but being there and making those bridges, building those bridges, and reminding folks and looking for places where we can help them and that how we can learn from them to better serve our students and to make sure that our faculty are knowledgeable. So that was always real big for me, as well as international presence. I happen to also serve as a member on the United States, it's USNCMI, so United States National Commission on Mathematics Instruction, USNCMI, out of the National Academy of Sciences. And the focus of that commission is to, again, build bridges with the other international committee in mathematics education. So during my term, we established for the first time an international committee within AMATIC, and there's a group of them that are quite active, and they go to the international conferences on math ed. So that's good.
It's interesting, because what you're saying is if you listen to Marilyn's interview, is very similar to what she was saying. And she was probably, if I'm remembering correctly, about 15 years before you. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about that as an importance for AMATIC and how important it was to continue those connections while at the same time maintaining our independence. Mm-hmm. She's afraid that if we at some point we might lose our identity there. Identity probably, I think, is the word she used as opposed to independence. So mm-hmm. So that would suggest there's been a lot of progress made, because as I say, you know she was 15 years before you roughly.
Well, and I've been following in Marilyn and Sadie's footsteps, and although I can never live up to all the great work that they have done, but especially during Marilyn's term, I mean, they had a lot of difficult barriers to overcome, because the two-year college was really just establishing its identity. Mm-hmm. Now, I would say now we have our identity. I don't try to defend that identity anymore, because I belong there. I don't have to say, why didn't you invite me? Well, sometimes they do forget, but I don't have to defend why I should be there. The community college is a major higher education institution for our country. And in mathematics, we really teach 46% of all post-secondary mathematics courses are taught in the community college. Now, a lot of it's developmental. So, in fact, just because I've just finished the CBMS survey stuff, 57% of our offerings are in developmental or pre-college. So, but anyway, we are a major player. So I don't feel that I have to defend my being there as they did back then, you know, 15 or 20 years ago.
Well, and defend was another word Marilyn used.
They were working
to defend it.
But I do need to remind people that there are ways that we can work together and build bridges to and from each other.
Right.
And so I thought that I worked hard to do that during my term, and I think we made some bridges. I was also on the Federal Advisory Committee for the National Science Committee. National Science Foundation for the Division of Education and Human Resources.
Is there any one accomplishment during your presidency that you are the proudest of?
Well, my aside from all these things, my personal interest was in developmental mathematics. And I feel that during my presidency, the Developmental Math Committee, in conjunction with the Gates Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation and the University of Texas, Austin, have made some real strides in bringing people together to talk about the future of developmental mathematics, particularly the algebra. Is the content of beginning and intermediate algebra as we know it now, is it the right mathematics for our students? Given that only about 7% of our students go on to calculus. So should those beginning algebra and intermediate algebra courses be taught as if they are pre-calculus or preparing students for calculus? Or should they be courses that help our students become more quantitatively literate and have the mathematics and the quantitative skills that they need to be citizens? Those are two different kinds of mathematics.
Those are the things we're calling pathways now. Yeah.
I am pleased to say, because it's something that I've been really interested in, that those conversations began during my term. And I continue to work on those pathways.
That is huge. But that was something that should have happened, that would have been great if it could have happened a long time ago, because that's a very positive move. Because those courses, I always felt, those courses, as they were, didn't really serve anybody.
They don't serve the calculus-bound students, and
they don't
serve our career-bound students.
Absolutely. They didn't. They served no one. And I was... So I think this whole pathways thing is a very positive thing.
Not everybody agrees, but...
Well, I think that's something to be very proud of in your presidency.
Well, actually, 15 years ago, I did a presentation at an AMAT conference that the title was, "The Content of Intermediate Algebra is Criminal."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. It was it was Yuri Treisman, I think, who once said that college algebra is a really tough sell. That, you know, it's hard to justify to people, particularly to students, and he's very right. So yeah. This is long overdue.
To get it on record, in terms of key issues during, I think, all presidencies, membership has been going down because we know that the new generations of faculty are not joiners like our generations. There's a lot of research on that about the X generations. Yeah,
I know. I'm getting this a little off topic here, but
Rob Farinelli actually has lots of that stuff.
Does he really? Okay, that is interesting.
About how they don't join and they go to work and go home and don't think about work anymore. It's not like
is this a Gen X thing? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It would be 1980, those born in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
late 70s, early 80s,
yep.
Who are the new faculty members. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been told that, I've been gone from my campus now for 10 years or more, and that's exactly the experience they're having with faculty committees and so forth. You know, it's a requirement because that's a requirement of their faculty position, but they don't work at it.
Mm-hmm. It's not important to them, or as important as it would have been to us, probably.
And not important to spend your own money to go to a national conference.
Right.
So operations. I'll go back to AMATIC. Has done great work on a shoestring budget, without a paid executive director. Cheryl Cleaves has done an outstanding job of getting our office going and keeping our staff going, and they do incredible work with minimal resources. Other organizations have a lot more staff and a lot more resources to do things with. So, okay.
We've hit on this a little bit, but how do you think the two-year college mathematics professor is perceived in the mathematics teaching community from the high school level and from the four-year university level?
I think that we are perceived more like college faculty now than we were in the 70s and 80s. Not because our role has changed, but because more community colleges have hired PhDs. So as more PhDs were willing to take positions at the community college, then somehow that enabled the perception of what we do to be elevated to more of a college. However, as you know, we all do the same thing, and what we do has not really changed. I mean, our students are challenged in so many ways, and therefore faculty have to have certain special, unique characteristics, both personally and professionally and content-wise, in order to meet the needs of our students, which are different from K through 12 and 4-year. So I think we are perceived as college teachers now. I think that the 4-year, and I've said this publicly, so I guess I wouldn't want it up on the screen, but the 4-year college mathematics faculty member, however, they respect us. They have no clue about what our students are like. You know, for them, calculus is the entry-level course.
Right.
So they have no idea how to teach somebody who can't add or subtract or solve an equation. So while I believe they respect us as colleagues, they haven't a clue about our students. And we don't teach those upper theory courses, so they don't really think of us as research mathematicians, which we aren't.
Right.
So that doesn't bother me. We aren't those. I don't try to be that. But I have a whole lot of skills that they don't have.
Do we have a positive image with the high schools, do you think, with secondary ed?
Yeah, I would say yes.
So what... To what extent is AMATIC's voice heard at the national level?
Well, I think that depends on our leadership. And so we are included on many national committees and initiatives. Sometimes we are still left out, forgotten, because there's just not enough room. You know, when you plan the membership of a national panel and it's only supposed to have 20 people on it, and you've got to have a lot of the researchers and you've got to have classroom teachers and so forth, sometimes there's not very many spaces and so they forget us. But we are heard if our leadership of AMATIC is there and speak up and build those relationships with the people. And some presidents of AMATIC work hard at that role, and some presidents don't. So again, without a paid executive director who goes to Washington regularly and gets to know and network with the other executive directors,
right,
it's harder for us to be in the mainstream. So I think it is probably the same as it has been for the last 20 years in terms of our presence. It's mainly the president who brings that to the national environment, and we've done a really good job, but other organizations have executive directors that also do a lot of building the bridges on that.
Well, and at least small operational offices in D.C.
Yeah. So, but we've done a great job, and again, it's all about networking within the organization. That's one of the strengths still of AMATIC, and then also networking between and among organizations, and that's always people related.
What are the key issues facing AMATIC? in 2012 and beyond, do you suppose?
Well, they really are are similar to maybe what they've been since the beginning of AMATIC. Providing the best professional development we can for AMATIC, but now with technology and video and webinar, we have many more venues or instruments that will allow us to do that work. And so professional development, I think, has taken a different tack, particularly because of the you know, they don't want to come,
right.
So we have to go to them. So that's good. So I think we need to do more about that. They use a technology. Membership is really a concern. I understand the numbers are down this year more than ever before. And again, what can we do to attract the faculty and make membership a value?
Mm-hmm.
But I think we continue to offer quality professional development at our national conference. We continue to try to work with our affiliate organizations, but many of the affiliate organizations see themselves as independent from AMATIC. In other words, we list them all as affiliates, but they aren't responsible to us, nor are we responsible to them in any way, either financially or membership-wise. So in order to address the membership issue, maybe we could do more at the state level. Operations always are something that we need to be mindful of. We've always had an excellent financial situation at Southwest Tennessee Community College. The name has changed a couple times, so I still have to think about that. But
where our home office is located.
Where our national office is, but they are very generous, and we're lucky for that. I think the key issue is what do the faculty need now? Actually tried to gather some of that information with a member survey to try to figure out what we can do better.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't get a lot of good information from it, really. Although the main thing that we did as a result of that membership survey was the webinars.
Mm-hmm.
People wanted more webinars.
That's sort of the professional development, distance education component.
Yep.
Because it's getting, I think, difficult for people to get to specific locations, and they like that information brought to them, just like our students do.
Yes. Yeah, yes. So key issues for the future, too, I think, are the whole distance learning. That's not going away.
It's not, no.
It's just escalating everywhere. I'm on a national, CBMS 2010, the National Survey of Mathematics Departments, and I said, I'd like some questions on that for, how many online courses are you teaching and how many students are in each section and
right.
So forth and so on. And I said, I think that the same thing's happening at four-year schools. And they said, oh, no, we don't have many distance learning students. Well, that isn't the case. There really are. Even the universities are finding that's really going to be something that they're going to increase over time, not decrease.
Well, I know we certainly had the conversation on my home campus about how we can improve the quality and what we need to be doing for those students to make it as close to possible as an on-campus experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is, I'm sure, a role that AMATIC is going to play in the future. helping define that.
From my personal experience, online teaching is very different than face-to-face teaching, and I wasn't very good at online teaching in the beginning. I mean, it's taken me at least 2 years to sort of get the handle of it and be able to interact in a positive way with the students. So that's a whole, that whole professional development. We don't really spend much time training our faculty. We just start offering online courses, right?
Right. That's exactly right.
So I guess to answer your question, faculty training in some of these new things that are influencing our classrooms. Way back when, it was, you know, learning how to use the graphing calculator. Where now it's you know, how do you teach online? How do you use the smart board? How do you use all the other technology that we have that enhance the teaching?
How do you deliver that content?
Yep, there you go. Perfect. Perfect.
Well, we've been talking with Ricky Blair, past president of AMATIC, and I enjoyed the conversation very much. Thank you for sitting with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for all that you're doing.